Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Phidias Club. This is a little bit special episode. It's episode 82, coming in only less than a week after we recorded the previous one. It's called Emergency Conservative Views, and I'm not going to say much more. I'll just jump into it. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phidias Club. My name is still Patrick Beja, and this is, I think, the shortest amount of time we've had between two episodes. We recorded an episode only last Saturday, a few days ago, and I felt it was a fair view on everything, but since we recorded on Saturday morning, my time. And since then, a lot of things have happened, or at least a lot of opinions have been expressed, especially regarding the executive order about travel ban, what's being referred to as the Muslim ban, which we'll discuss in a little bit. But the reason I wanted to do another episode was, first of all, to discuss all of these things. And the other thing is, basically, all right, because I want to yell at my conservative friends. That's why. That's the reason.
So did quite a good job last show.
Yeah, well, we didn't, you know, I thought we did an okay job, but I did send an email to Tony, who's there, and who has been on the Conservative Christian special episode we did a few months back. And before he could read it, he went to Twitter and said, wow, that episode was one-sided. So I think our minds crossed somehow, because let's do the introductions first, and then we'll discuss all of this. So you heard the lovely voice of Brian. I'm going to introduce Tony first, because he sent me an email, tweet, so he gets first introduction. Tony, how are you doing, first of all?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So you were on the conservative special, conservative Christian episode special we did a while back. And of course, in this episode, we're going to be discussing mostly the reaction to Trump's first week or two, I guess. And you don't have to say, you know, what you did for the election. I don't, for Brian either, but to set the stage, you're a conservative Christian American, and you are you were telling me in that episode that you were a tiny bit hesitant, but ultimately you are probably going to vote for Trump because of the pro-life stance, which is really important to you. Is that correct? Is that a fair way of characterizing your, you know, your political, moral stance, whatever?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And I'm not worried about saying it. I've been quite vocal with other people on Twitter, which is a public forum. Trump wasn't my first choice in the primaries, but once he made it through, he was the person that I stuck with. And like you said, primarily because of the pro-life issue.
Okay. And on the other hand, we have Brian, who is a lifelong conservative. I guess I can say lifelong Republican, Brian?
Correct. Yeah.
And you're at least in my mind, you're the stereotypical Republican. Basically, you're in the military. You have like a concealed carry permit. You have a gun on you.
Law enforcement background,
right? Yeah. All of that. So, and you were telling me that you weren't super happy with Trump, but you also couldn't bring yourself to vote for Clinton for a number of reasons, which go beyond the email controversy, which, you know, factored in, but not just that, right?
Right. Yeah, I voted none of these candidates. It was like a none of the above. That's why I voted. I didn't care for Trump, but there was just no way I was going to vote for Hillary. Just no way.
All right. So the stage is set. And before I start asking many questions and maybe... So let me say this first, because before I give you the mics. I might be a little bit more... ranty on this episode, and I think my job on this show is always to try and provide context and balance and create really a safe space for people to express themselves and to discuss how they view things. That's really the idea. And often we do have more left-wing leaning people on the show, so I try to be extra careful about not letting my personal feelings guide the show too much, even though I do express them. I don't make any secrets about that. But on this show, I feel like I'm in the minority, so while I still want this to be an incredibly cordial and open and friendly conversation, I might be a little bit more forceful in my opinion. So with that out of the way, I'm going to ask each of you guys to just, you know, give you a few minutes to discuss completely openly what you think. And my question is, what do you think about the first 2 weeks of the Trump presidency, and how do you view his, you know, the different things that have happened and his personality, the way he's conducted himself, the policies, all of that? And maybe we can start with Tony. Yeah, let's do that, Tony.
All right, sounds good. The first couple weeks, it's been rocky. So his personality is one of the things that absolutely turned me off on him from the very beginning. I just don't really like his demeanor. I can be the first to admit that I don't think he has the most presidential personality, if we're talking about understatements. But I agree for the most part with the idea of what he's trying to do. I think his implementation of what he has tried to do has been poor, and that needs to improve. But the idea of what he's getting at with, for instance, the travel ban, I agree with. I don't agree with a permanent ban on, I don't agree with a temporary ban on Muslims. I don't agree with the permanent ban on people from the countries that he's chosen. I do agree with the idea of increasing our procedures for vetting to make sure of who is coming in. So obviously that got botched, but I think the idea is there, and I think that I agree with the concept.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah,
enough.
Go ahead.
No, keep going. I think we're going to discuss. I think the three things I selected, there might be more, are the wall, the ban, and then the relationship to the press, which have been controversial as well. But keep going, and then we'll discuss, I think, those specifically, because there are a lot of questions that people like me have for guys like you.
Sure, then I won't really go onto the wall yet. I'll wait until we get to that discussion. Okay. But one thing that I'm seeing, and maybe I'm looking at it through rose-colored glasses or the opposite, I suppose, but I remember when Obama came into the office, and I remember there were people that were very unhappy. But I feel like the backlash against Trump, and maybe rightfully so, because he's doing things way differently than people are used to, or the things that he's doing or people disagree with much more vehemently than the conservatives disagreed with Obama. I don't know if that's the case, but it could be. But there's more, it seems like. And a lot of people say it doesn't really, you talk about facts don't matter, but in a lot of cases, it's how things seem to people that is really important. Now, I do agree facts matter, but there is the perception that makes people feel a certain way. And I feel, and there are examples of people who have been more centered in the past, and they're speaking out more now in a way that is just, it's bombarding on Twitter. And of course, that's the medium for a lot of the people that are listening to this podcast. And of course, it is for me as well. But I just feel like, what's the point? You know, you make yourself heard with the first criticism, and then you're just piling on with the next three tweets that say the same thing. So,
but don't you?
I'm kind of, go ahead.
Don't you think, though, that, you know, the fact that some people might have been more neutral or centered in the past, the fact that they feel the need to express that forceful, that strong, I'm guessing in this case it's outrage, doesn't that make you think that maybe there's a reason for the outrage? Or do you just, you know, think, oh, it was the same with Obama, whatever?
No, I definitely think there's a reason. I don't think they're just doing the same old stuff. I just, like I said, the first time you say it, okay, you said it. The second time, why? The third time, you're just getting ridiculous. I mean, it's the same stuff over and over from the same people. And to me, it's just, what's the point? What are you trying to accomplish? And that's how I felt about, since you didn't say you were going to talk about this point, I'll bring it up. And that's how I felt about the Women's March. What are you trying to accomplish? I know that it was said that it wasn't an abortion, a pro-choice march. But at the same time, and this could be fake news, I'll do air quotes around fake news, but this is what I understand to be true. They wouldn't allow pro-life groups to sponsor it. They would allow them to walk, but they wouldn't allow them to sponsor it. So that's an issue. But was around, women being, what's the word? I've completely blanked on the word that I was looking for. But when the rights, equal rights. So they're walking for that, but they have, I mean, the things that they're fighting against are illegal for the most part. Equal pay. If if there's proof that there's unequal pay, that's illegal. So you're fighting for it to be more illegal, what are you trying to accomplish? It seemed like they were just trying to say, we don't like what happened, and that's okay. But that was a lot of we don't like what happened, and a lot of the way they did it, in my opinion, was just inappropriate. You know, the cussing and the hats. I'm sorry, the hats were stupid and inappropriate.
Why were the hats? Wait, that is the first point where I'm going to say, why was it inappropriate? It was people marching, or maybe there's something I didn't understand about the hats. It was just hats that they knit themselves and they were wearing them. How did I miss something?
The vagina hats?
Oh, are they supposed to be vaginas? I didn't even realize this.
Yeah, and to me, that.
Okay.
What's that again?
Yeah, that's what they call them.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's inappropriate to me. I mean, I'm a old man in a middle-aged man's body, but that's inappropriate to me. And there were kids all around, and the vulgar language to me. I mean, that's not a public place kind of thing to do.
Okay, so, that feels a little bit. I understand everything you've said before. That feels a little bit super prudish to me. The fact that they're culling the things, it's not like they had giant, you know, pictures of vaginas or, you know, naked people in the thing. It was respectfully done. It was very peaceful. There was no violence during those protests. It's
surprisingly peaceful.
Yeah, surprisingly, I thought. But okay, all right, Tony, that's the way you perceived it. And on the protests, I think it's a little bit uncalled for. Like, what are you trying to accomplish? I think in the case of a general, I think it's important to let people know that it's the right to protest. You know, they're saying we don't like the way this is heading. And it, in reference to what you were saying on Twitter, if people keep repeating it, I understand that actually I tweeted something about this myself. I said, you know, yelling on Twitter is going to accomplish nothing. You should probably call your representative or write a letter or something like that. That might do a lot more. But the frustration, Twitter allows you to vent a little bit of frustration, and it also snowballs a little bit. So I understand what you're saying in that area, but I also understand when you feel attacked, like your integrity is attacked by what's happening, it doesn't feel like enough that you tweeted once and then you see something again. The frustration doesn't go down because you tweeted it once. It's not like, oh, I tweeted it once and now it's fine. In some cases, it might be, but there are a lot of cases where the issue is so big that you feel you need to yell into the void more. But all right, let's move on to Brian. How do you feel all of this has been unfolding? What do you think about all of it?
It's been very interesting. This is really kind of a new thing, how he's approached things. I mean, there's always this good and bad with him. I think the most interesting quote or little article I read was this week, within the last week, was with about Robert Gates in the Washington Times, and he said, he goes, dealing with Trump is like you're in parallel worlds, because you see the one guy in the public is completely different from the guy that you talk to in private. The guy in private is a thoughtful, considerate person, and that does not come over in the public persona of Trump. You know,
it's not just that it doesn't come over. He downright seems like a lunatic. I mean, the constant arguing about the illegal. Okay, let's not. Sorry,
well,
keep going, Brian.
We can go off. Let's take for the inauguration, the crowd size. You know, it was just kind of like what you were saying in the last show. What does it matter? What did the crowd size? I mean, that was like the kind of like the personality quirk he has. He just couldn't let that go, you know.
But it's not just a personality quirk. It's like, oh, it's endearing. He can't stop himself from smiling when
endearing.
Like but I mean, it's not like just a personality quirk. It's, I mean, the way I look at it, I see it as a character flaw. When you can't let something like this go, don't you see it as a serious character flaw?
Yeah, I see that's a flaw. I mean, maybe quirk was the wrong word, but yeah, I mean, I just find that's like part of the, that's the interesting part. Like, man, you just, he can't pick up his head up from the ground. He can't look a little more forward. Like I said, and then he got into it, and then the press picks up on it, and it just all kind of coalesces into something bigger than it really ever should have, and he had the new press secretary come out, on the weekend. The first press conference was just all about the crowd size, and
right,
he wasn't right.
So you mentioned I think on a show we did when we were talking about the wall, and we can have the conversation about the wall afterwards, but sure. you I think you said, I didn't go back and listen to it, but I think you said something along the lines of, well, everyone knows he's not going to build a wall because it's ridiculous and it wouldn't do anything, and so we all know he's not going to do it. Turns out he's at least actually seriously trying to do it.
Well, he's saying it, but it doesn't make it that it's going to happen. or happen the way like people literally will happen. Like there'll be an actual like wall of like concrete and stuff. I don't see that happening.
The fact that you thought it was so outrageous and ridiculous that no one would seriously entertain the idea, and well, that now he is attempting to do it. Doesn't that make you think, whoa, wait a second. What is he doing here? What is this dude trying to?
Well, it's just that it's just so much like he says a wall. Like, I mean, that's the whole thing. And he coalesces his idea into like the wall or a wall. And it's not, it's such a more nuanced thing about what he's talking about. Cause there's a good fence. You can have better fencing in areas. And, you can do that. Like they did Gatekeeper in the San Diego area where I was at, and it works. It does a good job. It's not perfect, but if you wanted to replicate that, even just doing that fence all along, you couldn't do that. I mean,
but he's still trying to do it, Brian. That's or at least that's the way I'm.
Well, that's
looking
what he's saying. But
he's the president now. He's the president, and he's still saying things that are either undoable or ridiculously expensive and inefficient and bad.
Saying that what I think he'll pivot. You know, he'll say, well, this is what I meant, you know, when I talked about that. You know, if they make more fencing or whatever, they're hiring more agents. You know, they've said they're going to hire 5,000 more Border Patrol agents. And, you know, like I said, it's hard to, I mean, there's no plan for a wall. I mean, there's no, like, this is what we're going to do. He's just keep saying, they just keep kind of bringing up saying the wall or a wall. And it's like, well, you know, he's never really distilled it into an actual plan, you know.
Okay. So still, I, you know, might start repeating myself, but he's the president. And I guess it doesn't matter whether or not they're going to build the wall. Doesn't that concern you as a conservative and an American citizen that you now have a president that is, forget about flip-flopping, you still don't know what's going to happen. You know, at some point we were like, oh, but he's not going to do that. Oh, but he's not going to do this. Oh, but, you know, he's not like that. Oh, but when he'll be president... He is now president. He's still doing the same things. Are you not concerned about this man running your country? I guess, as a conservative, as a responsible American. It seems that you're telling me, yeah, whatever, he won't rebuild the world.
I don't think that's right. Yeah, okay. I'm still concerned. Well, I mean, that's what I mean. It's just, well, what is it going to be? You know, I guess, but I don't know. I mean, do you know? I mean, I don't know.
And that's the concern. I guess my point is, maybe I should ask the question differently. Are you worried?
I want to know what the plan is, but there's no plan. He talks about it, but there's no plan. Like I said, there's no actual thing. This is what we're going to do.
Isn't that the source of worry for you?
That's why I want to know. I want to know why. Like I said, I like with the Muslim ban. I mean, or the supposed Muslim, I wouldn't call it quite like that, but well, it was so poorly done, and I don't really see the actual. I mean, I understand why he wants to do something like that, but I take it after the Wall Street Journal. It's like using a blunderbuss. You don't really need to. I mean, it's just too broad. Mm. You know, we can discriminate in those countries that were listed. We can discriminate, you know, who comes in and comes out. He has that power already. He doesn't need to have an executive order for it. You know, that's what I just don't get, you know, but it was so poorly done, you know, last second, all this stuff. And it really didn't, you know, really doesn't instill a lot of confidence in, you know, in him, how he's going to do anything else.
Okay. Let me ask the same question to Tony there, because I think the way I'm formulating it is distilled to the most, the simplest form. I guess, Brian, you didn't quite say specifically, yes, I'm worried about this man. You, I feel at least you sort of danced around it, but maybe
I'm reserved. I'm okay. reserved. Yeah. You know, I'm not willing to go one way or the other. I mean, just what are we? I want to know, like, what are we talking about? You know, what is?
But at what point, if we don't know what we're talking about for the next year or two, at what point do you start saying, "All right, this is worrsome to me"? What has right. to happen for you to,
well, I mean,
to
the
start
thing too
worried?
Is that we're only 2 weeks into it.
And already he's jumbling everything. Yeah. Already
yeah,
he's achieved
that's
nothing.
What I mean.
He's done
like
nothing properly, nothing right.
No, wait a minute.
Okay, please.
I wouldn't say he's done nothing right.
Thank
he
you.
He has messed
Go
up
ahead.
the travel ban, yes. But that doesn't mean he's done nothing right. And to answer your question, I won't go to worried level. I will go with concerned. But he hasn't even got all of his appointees appointed yet. Like Brian said, it's 2 weeks in. I'm willing to give. Well, I mean, it doesn't matter if I'm willing to give. We elected him. I elected him. I'm actually encouraged by some of the stuff he's done for the reasons that I elected him. But I am concerned about his implementation of orders. So I would like to see that get shored up. But I wouldn't say that he's done nothing right. I love the fact that, and it encourages me because of why I voted for him, that he signed the executive order that defunded international abortions. And I don't know if you saw what I saw, but good grief. The conservatives were practically dancing in the streets because they thought that he was defunding American abortions because the news was all out of whack, and that's still a thing. But that's encouraging to me that it's going in the right direction. Now, maybe he did it because of business reasons, because he's a businessman and he doesn't want to see the money go to that, but that was encouraging.
Okay, fair enough. So you're still, you will be worried. Like, how long are you giving him? 6 months, a year? I don't know. From my point of view, you know, already the issues with the way he's handled himself, the way he still tweets, the obsession with illegal voters, which come on. And the crowd size and all of this, it's because of my political opinions, but already I'm like, this is hard to see as anything other than worrisome. But what would need to happen for you guys to think, you know, to I don't know how to express this exactly, but we keep saying about him, oh, it will be fine, and it's not. And then we're like, oh, it will be fine, and it's not. And you're, you know, it's still, he keeps doing the same things that we thought he would stop doing. So what needs to happen for you guys to think, yes, he's going too far? I don't understand more he can do. Yeah, Brian.
I think the whole thing about he's not going to, I kind of stopped thinking that, you know, after basically like the last show I was on, I think it was in September. Mm. And it's like, wow, you just can't, you know, this guy is, you know, he just keeps going, you know, it's just really incredible. I mean, and you got to admit, I mean, even he was surprised he won. I didn't think up until the day before the election, I didn't think he was going to win. I thought he was going to be a lot closer than people thought. Yeah. But I didn't think he was going to win, you know, so it's hard to, you know, I do think that some of the reactions, especially like I said, on Twitter, and especially with like a lot of celebrities, I mean, they are all about, they're saying it's going to nuke the country. He's going to start a nuclear war. He's, you know, he's going to get the military out. They're going to start taking over the country, shooting people. And it's just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, it's like.
So I think it's fair to address this question and the worries about if we want to put them in a little bit more, contextualized place. This idea mm-hmm. that there is an authoritarian, autocratic process. And a lot of that includes, you know, there are things like discrediting intellectuals and discrediting the press and governing by executive orders. And, you know, it's not like autocracies happen in 2 weeks. And I'm not, as I said in the previous episode, I don't think he's Hitler. I don't think he's going to go that way. And certainly the American political system has a lot more integrity and checks and balances than, you know, Germany in the 30s or other countries. But, and I'm trying to be as objective as possible here, let's talk about the press thing. The denying of reality and the obsession with the self-aggrandizing and the dismissing of intellectuals and scientific fact. Don't you understand why people's mind go, whoa, okay, wait a second. Maybe we need to be a little bit careful about what happens next now.
Sure.
Brian, then I'll ask Tony.
Yeah, sure. I understand. I mean, I want to. It's worrisome, but I mean, it just seems like it's like what he's been doing all along.
And that's the worry. He's been doing it all along.
This guy, you got to know that this guy, he's different from any other person we've elected president. I mean, not by a little, but by a lot, it appears. He is so, and think about it. He's been in the media for how long? I mean, he's been in the media for decades. You know, I was a young guy when Trump kind of first hit the airwaves and all
so
that
it's
stuff.
Been a really long time. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's been a really long time. Yeah. And he is just, it is incredible how media savvy he is. And that, you know, he's gone all these years being in the media, being in the tabloids. And it's just, and the way he uses Twitter, I find it very interesting. I mean, I think it's, you gotta be a little impressed with how he runs it, and whether you like it or not, you gotta be impressed that, you know, he's so savvy about it. I mean, but I'm not saying he's like a mastermind, but it is interesting.
I hate to go there, but I'm going to, because again, I'm the one, liberal here.
Sure.
So was Hitler. And I hate to say, I hate to get Godwin point-ish, but there is one setting where it's fair to talk about totalitarianism and Nazis and fascism, and that's when you have a political climate that is favorable to nationalism and xenophobia. And I think even if you don't think he is at his core a racist, there is a xenophobia vibe, which is now difficult to dispute. You can argue on the extent of it, but it's kind of there. And I don't understand how you can not defend him, but explain away concerns like, well, it's taking a bad direction by saying, yeah, but he's different. Yes, he is. And that's the worry. He's different bad. Sometimes there's different good. Sometimes there's different. But sometimes there's different bad. And suppressing not even truth, because that some people might say it's subjective, but suppressing facts and obsessing over self-aggrandizing things when you're the president of the U.S., I don't think it's different good. I don't think it's different. I think it's different bad. And so the fact that you're saying, yeah, but he's different, he's media savvy, and yeah, that's the worry.
He is. Well, I know. I think the different bad on, you know, like I said, with the crowd size, I didn't like that. I didn't understand it. You know, I didn't think it was good, you know, but I just think it's hard to pin this guy down. And I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not saying it's good or different good. Or neutral, but I mean, it definitely has a negative. Like I said, the inauguration day, the travel ban, I don't see those as being good. It's just that, like I said, but it's just that I think when I read media reports and I think in some ways, and you know, I don't like him singling out CNN. I don't agree with that. But there was a, you know, he's just, that's kind of how he operates. You know, you can't, that seems to be like the thing in the front that he wants you to see, you know, and then there's these other things in the background, you know,
he has a lot of
stuff going on at one time.
None of what you're saying is reassuring me. You're basically saying, you know, I'm telling you, well, this is taking a direction that is concerning because of these and these and these reasons that, you know, show that autocratic regimes and totalitarianism works a certain way, and we're seeing the early steps of that. And certainly, I don't agree with the
Hitler compare. I don't see that at all. I'm not saying
he's going to become Hitler. What I'm saying is he has some of the characteristics of his administration have similarities with.
It's not even close. It's not even close. When you look at the context of what was going on, like the 20s and 30s in Europe and Germany and with Hitler, the context of what those times and the context of what the political thought that was going on in the world at that time, considering the war that just ended, it's not being replicated. It's not even close. We're not even close to that. I don't know, understand why people love to jump onto that, because it's not even close. When you read about those times, there's no comparison at all. None.
So even like the suppressing
one iota, you know,
even the denying of facts and the suppressing of intellectuals and science.
I don't know what the suppressing. Yeah, the what are you talking about? Like the National Park Service thing, or
yeah, not just that, but the global warming, and you know, the general idea that
the global warming's always been a subject, there have been opposing sides on that, you know, for years now, you know.
All right, I could keep going, but I think Tony deserves to have his say in all of this.
the conservative side is against global warming, not necessarily, you know, to say it's not a thing, but, you know, the causes or whatever. But the conservative side is less inclined towards global warming. Since we've had 8 years to forget about that, so he's just taking the conservative side on that one. But now we've had that 8 years for it to really get implanted in everyone's head that all the stuff around global warming, I don't really want to get into that, but just now that the conservative side is back, is like, oh, he's crazy, he's suppressing intellectuals. That's just the side that the conservatives take in this country. And you know, you're talking about all these things that he does. I agree with Brian. The Hitler thing is ridiculous. People are comparing him to Hitler because they hate him with much more passion. And again, this is totally anecdotal, totally just perception. But the people that hate Trump hate him more violent. Well, I don't want to say violently, although in some cases
the
words
fair.
Have been violent. Yeah, violently, passionately, vehemently. Then we conservatives disliked Obama. I say disliked because I'm putting myself into it. I didn't hate Obama. Yeah. I didn't like his policies, but I don't want to say I'm not a hater, because that's, you know, a totally different kind of thing. But I don't hate. I try not to hate. But you know, the tweets, what difference does it make? I mean, I understand that it's different, and I understand that it's not presidential in people's eyes. It's not presidential because we've had this character that has been the president for however many years that we've had one, and he doesn't fit that mold. So now he's sending these ridiculous tweets and he's going after people on Twitter. He's doing the things that we do. I mean, We've all either seen or done or been the victim of someone going crazy Twitter rage. He's doing what we do. So does that mean we're all Hitler?
Well, all right. I think the Hitler thing sort of got out of hand here. I'll tell you why it matters to me that these things are happening. The fact that you can be the White House press secretary or any government's press liaison and present as fact things that aren't fact is one of the methods used by totalitarian regimes to push forward their agenda. So I understand that we might say, oh, but it's not the same thing. But it's hard to deny that there is a similarity here. And I don't think we should get lost in whether or not, you know, Trump is a mustached dictator. The idea that the press secretary is saying this is not what happened, when clearly it's false, should be a concern to every person who values democracy. Period. Well, did you see what I did there? The period.
Patrick, you're set at this base level of the last 8 years with Obama, and you know, like you and you know many others. Every time, you know, Josh Earnest, his press secretary, went up in front, like everything he was saying was the truth. It wasn't always the truth. I'm not saying he was lying.
And that's the difference. Lying, in this case, he is lying.
I understand but you're, you know, I was always skeptical. You know, like when Josh Earnest, when they came up, like the whole Iran deal stuff, the $400 million for the hostages in Iran, all that stuff leaked out little by little. All that information, and every day that, you know, Josh Earnest was going up there, not telling the truth. He was not telling the whole truth.
Brian,
you know, he was couching it.
That's,
you know, but
that's different. And I hate that false equivalency.
How is that different?
It is different because, of course, different? You are going to have in politics. You're always going to have.
He was not telling the truth about the Iran deal and about the $400 million. They avoided saying anything about that for months.
You can't.
I was not.
You
being
can't for, say
I was not, that was not being candid.
You
that
can't,
was not being forward, right?
You can't make the equivalency between diplomatic and political ramifications that force you to say things that aren't accurate in public and in private. Obviously, when you're going to have diplomatic relationships, but, that's what we expect.
Well, what
and,
I'm
and,
getting the point I'm getting
but,
is,
but that but let,
being
let me finish.
I'll always
Brian,
skeptical.
I'll,
you know,
but
you know,
there
no
is a difference
is there,
between that.
Skeptical.
There is a difference between that and saying and announcing to everyone the sky is green today. There is
Did
a
he
line.
Say that?
There, yes,
well,
he
like
said.
I said
he
I was
said
always skeptical.
It was the.
You're not. You weren't skeptical before with Obama, but I was, and other Republicans were.
And now you're being
skeptical with them. I'm still skeptical. That hasn't changed.
But Brian,
you know,
there's a difference between, you know, there's a line where it's just a falsehood and a whatever political game you're playing. And Tony, you're asking, did he say that? He did when he said this was the biggest attendance at a political inauguration ever,
right,
period,
wrong.
Right? That was, it's
that
was a very
wrong.
Demonstrable falsehood right. That, you know, so what I'm trying to say is that, of course, politics are complicated and diplomatic relationships are complicated. And sometimes you do something and you do something different. And it doesn't matter whether it's Obama or Bush or Clinton or Reagan. You do have to have a public persona and, you know, a public discourse and a private discourse. That's what politics is. But making the equivalency between this and what Sean Spicer is doing in the office of the press secretary now, or, you know, he's done it at least a couple of times to my knowledge,
right.
is disingenuous, I think.
No, what I'm saying is you have to be skeptical. You have to be skeptical no matter who's in front of that podium there for the press secretary. You always have to be skeptical. You always have to be questioning. And that's the difference. A lot of people are, I think that seems to be a difference that's going on right now. People weren't being skeptical before. So many were not being skeptical before. I was, a lot of Republicans were. And like I said, I still am, you know, I still,
but that's
I read
the trap,
other things.
Brian.
I don't take, Huh?
That's the trap. When you say, well, it's all lies. It's so you always have to be skeptical.
No, I'm not
you always
I have never, I don't sometimes think it's all lies, but I'm saying you have to verify. You have to go on your own. You have to read other things. You just don't, you know, you take what they're saying, but you have to, you know, you can't always take it just at 100% face value, can you?
But
I mean,
of course not, but it's a different issue. You're sort of talking about a different issue to the one I'm trying to put forward. And I really think that they're different ones, and you're sort of basing your conclusion from one on the other. But all right, again, Tony, I think we might be eating into your talking time here. Anything you want to add to this?
Yeah, I do. And I understand absolutely, Patrick, what you were saying. You're talking about, you know, politically motivated falsehoods versus just a straight up, it's the largest crowd ever. And first of all, I'll say this again, who cares? And I know you can say, well, who cares? And I've heard a lot of that. What difference does it make? Who cares how big the crowd was? Why is he saying that about something?
It makes a
so
difference
stupid?
Because if he can say that about the crowd, then maybe he can say that about other things as well.
Well, and that brings me to my next point is if we, you know, if he's going to lie about that, I completely lost my point. I apologize.
I guess I might be seeing your next point, which is if it actually does matter, then we'll do something about it then.
No, that wasn't it. Okay. What I was getting at with the crowd size was people are getting onto him for this little thing, but they're also creating that, right? The people that are the people that are asking him, well, why are you saying that? They're also escalating it. So both sides are escalating it. He did it first, and that's stupid. Okay? So don't think that I'm pushing that off. Mm. But the other side is also escalating it further.
Because we're so incredulous, you know?
Right. Well, no, because they hate him.
No. Okay. Here, you sort of stopped the buck earlier when I was getting a little bit out of my comfort zone, but here the buck stops for me. It's not because they hate him. No one cared about Sean Spicer until he did that first press conference. And the fact that he would use that first press conference to rant about the crowd size is not a generator of hate. It's a generator of concern for the fourth pillar of democracy, which is a free press, and that a huge shift in the way the press, the White House manages the press, you know, going, okay, all right.
Well, you misunderstood me. When I said him, I didn't mean Sean Spicer. I meant Donald Trump. Spicer's representing Trump.
Right,
and I'm not saying it's all hate, but it helps. It helps those people that really want to find every single flaw that he has, which we are finding every flaw that he has because people are after every flaw. I mean, I feel, and perhaps rightfully so, he came out of a non-political background. He's no political experience, but we are really trying to find everything wrong with Trump that we can, and
well,
it seems
he's making it easy.
Yeah. Well, he wears it on his. He puts it right out there. You know, he is who he is. And I said earlier, I'm concerned. That I am concerned, but I feel like we need to give a little bit longer. Let him do some more things. Maybe mature a little bit. You know, we're not going to give him 8 years to mature. And I said it, you know, if after 4 years he's still doing this stuff, of course, he's not going to get reelected. I think it's entirely possible that if he matures a bit, does some good things, he'll get reelected because is causing him to get reelected with the conservatives, just like they did before.
Right. I'll ask a very provocative question. If he keeps doing things like this, And we get, it's a ridiculous question, and we'll get to the band in a second because that's much more interesting. But just for fun, if he keeps doing things like this, and let's say in a parallel universe you had the re-election that came up and Hillary Clinton was his opponent again, just for fun, would you vote for Trump or would you vote for Clinton? You know, if he kept doing all of those things we're describing as concerning to you guys. Still none of the above. Okay, Tony?
If he continued doing the things that he's done thus far, I would still vote for him. Yes.
Okay. All right.
I think that was one of the things about the election I think a lot of people missed was just the people that just the total dislike of Hillary. It was vastly underestimated.
Okay, then another question. Let's say he is up against Mark Zuckerberg.
Bernie?
No, not Bernie. Zuckerberg. No, okay, no Zuckerberg. Michelle Obama.
Yeah, no.
No. Okay. All right.
I wouldn't.
No, Bernie. You're not picking Bernie. Wow.
I don't know, Bernie.
You would have made it harder with Zuckerberg, Patrick. I mean, honestly.
I said Zuckerberg, but
I know. So I didn't get a chance. I'd have to look at his stances on the issues that are important to me. But that would have been a harder decision than Michelle Obama or Hillary.
Mm. I still think Bernie would have made it a tougher race.
But you wouldn't vote for Bernie, Brian.
I wouldn't have voted for him, but you know, I would have been kind of like. He's president.
Rolled Bernie.
What, Tony?
Pardon?
I think Trump would have rolled Bernie. There wouldn't have been any. It wouldn't even been as close as it was.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it would have been a lot closer. Mm.
Well, okay. Last topic I didn't want to address is the ban, which has basically been the reason why things have exploded on Twitter. And certainly, I've seen a lot of this myself, even from good old Europe here. So everyone knows what the ban is. I think the thing that concerns me the most is, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like it is illegal to outright ban people for being from one religion, and as squirmy as they're making it, 100%. You know, it is, they're saying you can't come from these countries, which are Muslim majority countries, except if you're not from the religion of the official government religion, which is Islam. So in effect, however you try to spin it, you're telling people you can't come into this country if you're from these and you're Muslim. This is deeply concerning to me because of the immigration aspect of things and humanitarian. And even more than this, for what it is, for what it means for America, you know, to me, as a foreigner, as someone who was taken in, for different reasons in France after fleeing a warring country, Lebanon, with my family. America, and not just that, but America has always been the beacon of acceptance and immigration, and tolerance and the melting pot. And the idea that you can be great no matter where you come from, and we will welcome you in our midst. And, you know, the gift that we gave you with Lady Liberty has, you know, give me your meek and your blah, blah, blah. Is it Lady? Is that where it is on Ellis Island?
Anyway. Your weak, huddled masses.
Right. And this is a stab in the soul of the American spirit for me, or at least I'm going to speak for myself. I tweeted this at some point. I said I could never have imagined in a million years that America would do something like this. And on one hand, the government is doing it, so it expresses the will of the people. And on the other hand, to address what you were talking about, Tony, earlier, saying what does it matter, you know, what are you trying to achieve by demonstrating? On the other hand, the response of a lot of the public, which has been at the very least very concerned and at the most outraged and going down to demonstrate, tells me that at least a portion of America does not accept that this is what America stands for. So this is my the way I look at it, and I'm sad. I'm honestly sad for what it says about America. I'm disappointed. You guys, after having saved us, you know, a couple of times, and being that ideal that we love to hate first. Sometimes, you know, it's like, yes, America, you do this, you do that. There's this, that, but there is somewhere a moral ideal that you have in your DNA that we can look up to, even if no one stands up, you know, up to it, you know, all the time. And another aspect of it, and I'm going to give Tony a chance to talk here and maybe put you a little bit on the spot, but I think it's fair. The other thing that surprises me or even shocks me is the Christian values that are of tolerance and acceptance and of helping the poor, taking your neighbor in if he needs help, and all of those things. It's very hard for me to reconcile all of this with the conservatives that claim to be Christians and that still say, well, you are a war-torn country, we don't want you here. So I'm sure, you know, I don't know what your stance is on this specifically. I mean, you said it was not going about it correctly, but that was a big rant. What do you think?
Well, okay, so there's a few interesting points in there. First of all, let's talk about the Christian aspect. I don't think there's any doubt that the Christian way is to help people in need. That's obvious. Now, I read an article yesterday that was talking about what the Bible really says about, you know, taking in refugees. And I don't know that I agree entirely with the article, but it basically boiled down to, you know, the story of the Good Samaritan. He helped the person that they, you know, had philosophical disagreements with, but he didn't take him into his home. And I'm not saying, don't jump all over me. He helped him. He gave him money. He provided aid for him. He took him to
I'm restraining
inn,
myself right now.
Way.
I
Thank
don't know
you,
if you can hear
but
me.
Yeah, I can practically feel it. Right. But I said I didn't necessarily agree with that. But at the same time, I feel like the optimal solution here is not an outright ban. It's just getting our procedures in order. Now, the vetting. Do we want to help people? Full disclosure, I have very little contact with people from any foreign nation. The most contact I have is right now with you, Patrick, and when I go to conferences for my work. That's it. There's just not that many people that have immigrated or, you know, around right, me right, right. where I am in the country. So that I'm sure I'm skewed somewhat on that, but I would be okay with us taking people in, but I think that we have to, one, know who we're taking in so that it's safe, and two, have a method for accommodating those people that isn't just a drain. And I'm going to sound bad, but just, you know, pumping money into them. Yeah, exactly. From the government or what have you. And
but
those are the issues to me. And I do think it's important to help. Now, this ban that we're talking about, there's a reason, of course, that these countries have been chosen. First of all, contrary to
they don't
to
have businesses
Turkey's,
with Trump, isn't
no,
that?
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. That is exactly what I was going to say.
It's only a 90-day ban. It's only a 90 days.
First, yes, that's correct. But secondly, it has nothing to do with Trump. Trump, they chose the countries that Obama created a list for. That was a list that Obama created as far as
a list of
nations.
What?
I don't know. Is it hostile nations or nation – like it was a list of nations.
Yeah, exactly what it was. It was the nations that were top in security concerns.
Yes. So Obama created that list, not Trump. So it has nothing to do with Trump's business dealings or America's business dealings. Well, maybe it did under Obama. But if you want to blame someone for the list, it's Obama's list. But also, let's be realistic. You know, the danger that we're seeing, and I'm not naive enough to think that every person coming over here is a terrorist. That's stupid. But the reason that they're putting the ban in, or the temporary ban into place, is for security purposes. The reason that we have security worries is because of terrorist activities. And the terrorist activities are coming from Muslim extremists. Not all Muslims, please don't get me wrong. But that's, I mean, so there are reasons for these things to happen.
But
and go ahead.
The terrorist activity that we've seen in the past, 20 years came from people from countries that are not included in the ban. So I don't get how this makes sense.
Weren't some of the attacks in France by refugees?
No, I don't think so. Not refugees.
Okay.
But,
that these countries are just a start. You know, and I'm not of a full-on ban. I hope that when this all settles out, that we will still have immigration. We will still be taking in some refugees, but the
you want them vetted
will be they will be vetted.
Extreme vetting.
Aren't they already vetted though? Aren't they already very much vetted?
Oh yeah, 2 years.
So and I mean it. All right, Brian, what do you think of this?
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, I think I take 100% what the Wall Street Journal said yesterday in editorial, and that it was a blunderbuss approach. And in my knowledge of immigration law, is that they have. I mean, I didn't understand the need for the executive order, because the president and the executive branch, that's their purview, is letting whoever they want to come in. You know, there are certain rules, but I mean, when it comes to security concerns, the president doesn't need an executive order to say, hey, we need to look at these people from this country maybe a little bit closer. It doesn't take an executive order to do that. It doesn't take a ban. And also that we're at a height like different from Jimmy Carter had a travel ban with Iran after 79.
Well, that makes sense to me. Yeah,
Hold on. That makes sense to me because we didn't have the resources that we have now. Now we do have the resources for like people from Sudan, Iraq, the other countries, or Syria. We have the resources to be able to vet them, and if we can't establish their bona fides, then we don't let them in. You know, they don't get the visa. That's already in place now. And then the whole thing with the permanent residents, the green card holders holding the I-551,
letting them in.
That was, well, and then they changed that.
Yes, but thankfully, I saw that earlier, but. That was, I
didn't
think,
understand
what
that
got
at all
me.
Because they, well, because that's different. They have legal status in the United States.
Yeah.
You can't just say no to letting them in. They already have legal status. They've already gone through a process. I mean, believe me, it's a process for someone to get an I-551. It ain't easy, you know. So that's why I don't understand like the whole blunderbuss, the whole rollout. It was just ridiculous in my eyes, because I'm like, they already have those tools available. If someone's a real security concern, they can just say, no, we're not letting you in. That's always been in the purview.
So
I think there's a little bit of overreaction, but, I understand it,
But don't you see how, to people who are concerned and maybe looking for things that go wrong in this presidency, when they see things like this?
Oh, it's terrible.
Easy, but not uncalled for, and I'm talking to Tony as well here. It's not uncalled for. It's not because we hate him, but it's easy to go, holy crap, what are you doing?
They deserve all the criticism on this, definitely. Yeah, it was just so badly done, you know. And then the whole thing, then you have like the acting attorney general turned on, and it was just so badly done. And she's not going to defend it in court, and then they fire her, and it's like, well, you know what? The administration put all those pieces into play. You know, they could have, they didn't set it up. It's like they rolled it out like last second. And and like so little thought seems to have been put into it.
Can we talk about that for just a moment? The attorney general thing. I saw a ton of backlash over that, over her getting fired for quote insubordination. The opinion of the law of the people that, you know, lawyers, people that stay the law, seems to be that was correct. That she didn't have a leg to stand on for what she was doing with what is under her purview, and she was being insubordinate, and that
she was grandstanding, but they put her in a position where she could do that.
I would even say it's not just that she could do that. I think she was put in a position where you have to make a choice, as you were saying, Brian. There is already the administrative mechanics right, to do what this was aimed for. And by doing you're making people have to choose, basically. And
yeah, but she's an attorney. She get that choice. You have to defend your client. Her client was, you know, the president or the United States of America. She doesn't have that choice.
I think her client is the legal system. And in this case,
that's not how it works, Patrick. The client is the United States government.
All right.
How the attorney general works. But like I said, they put her in a position where she could do that. I mean, it was all on them. I don't blame her.
Let me get to the end of my thought process here.
I'm sorry.
The reason why this is so upsetting for many people is that the logic of all of it is difficult to justify for all the reasons you said, Brian. But even beyond this, there is a point when you're talking about ideas and laws and legal processes, and that these things express an intent, and I'm going to get a little bit not religious, but maybe mystical here, express an intent from your soul, from your moral compass. And in this case, what this expresses is, xenophobia and something that, you know, if you, it's basically a moment where you're asked by circumstances to make a choice. And either you approve of it or you don't. And there kind of isn't really a middle ground. And if you don't, it's kind of hard to say, yeah, I don't really like this, but it doesn't really matter. Some things do matter very much. And I'm not 100% sure we're there yet, because they thankfully reverted that horrendous green card and dual citizen decision. People who have lawful right to enter the country are allowed again. But so this sort of pushes me over the, okay, it still bothers me very, very much, but I don't know that this is 100% unacceptable. But still, it in this situation where you are seeing people with green cards being denied entrance in the country,
right?
At that point, you're like, well, you know what? I don't care about anything else. F you. You're that's it. You're gone. I am against you now, right? And I guess my question to you guys would be, do you understand that sentiment that there is a point where nothing else matters? If you do something, then the other things don't make up for it. You're lost to me. And
right.
I'll just say one more thing. Please keep in mind that for all of the ranting that I've been doing now, I really do try really hard, and I think I achieve this idea that I'm going to try and look at things objectively and look at everyone's ideas and stay not neutral but objective on many things. So I'm taking this stance from, I hope, an objective point of view, and it would be if we started talking about extreme communists that we have here in Europe or even in France as well, I might be just as forceful. So this is not about right or left. This is about principle. So yeah, that idea that at some point the other things don't matter, but that thing is what I stand on. What do you guys think? I guess, Tony, you have a comparable situation here.
Right? Yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about because I'm in the exact same boat with my religious ideals. So, yeah, I don't fault you for your misguided ways, Patrick. That's fine.
Very generous of you.
Yeah, well, I'm a generous guy. But no, I understand where people are coming from. There are certain things that you just hang your hat on, and that's the thing that you've got to stick with. And I'm the same way. So I get it.
But isn't racism one of them?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to be racist at all.
But don't you think this is a very, I don't want to say, doesn't that seem racist to you? What's happening now?
It's walking the line. Is it absolutely, you know, I was thinking about this last night when I was trying to think about what in the world I was going to say on this thing today. And mm-hmm. I don't know what they're thinking. I could speculate that when they do the temporary ban on Muslim countries, that they're really trying to ban Muslims. I could speculate that, just like you could, and a lot of people have gone to that place.
You don't think that's the case?
Well, they're obviously not banning Muslims. It's not a ban on Muslims because there's many other countries with Muslims that are allowed to come. So,
but they're both banning only Muslims from that country, from those countries.
I'm sorry?
If you're a Christian or a Jew or, let's say, an agnostic person, you can come in. It's only for Muslims who live in those countries. Which, by the way, if we're trying to fight terrorism, first of all, as we said, they might come from other countries, but okay, the Obama thing, but they could just say, I'm not a Muslim. Or I guess there might be vetting, I don't know. But yeah, it is Muslims. Isn't it? Right.
But I'm showing my ignorance here because I was not aware of that particular thing. And I don't know, you know, in today's news ways, who knows? But I didn't know that. That's wrong if that's the case.
Brian, I'll try to look it up, but I was pretty sure this is the case, that if you're not of the country's official religion, then you're exempt from the ban. I'll try to look it up, but Tony,
there's a minority exceptions, I guess, from that, but would it just be, but then I'm starting to think, like you, I'm kind of thinking, well, does that include Sunnis and Shias? So if Shias are the minority, Muslims. Does that include them?
No, they're Muslims.
But I'm just saying, but they can be a minority.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, and
I think they did it for Christians is the way I look at it. But.
Well, yeah, could the thought process be that those people are persecuted in a Muslim nation?
that
kind of like refugees?
Well,
religious refugees?
I guess, but you know, it's not like...
Well, they are.
It's not like... The thing that is striking is that there are many people who are victims of what's happening in those countries. And anyway, so, okay, Tony, I think...
Including Muslims.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But so if...
Well, like I saw with our friend Turkey, he put a video on Twitter, I think it was last month or maybe earlier this month, and it was a shootout with two ISIL or Daesh people, like and like a few blocks from where he lives, and I had a shootout with a cop, you know, with a cop, like, and it was like right there, mm-hmm. you know, someone had a video, and it was like right there in the middle. I think it's, you know, he lives in Jeddah or what, right?
Riyadh.
It was right there in Riyadh, you know? So, you know, it's the terrorism or the Islamists, you know, they're, you know, of course they hit Muslim, other fellow Muslims more than they hit, you know, other religions.
So, okay. But yeah,
that's why I'm saying that the ban. I mean, the one thing we can look, maybe the thing you can look for, look at the, you know, the ban is that it's supposed to only be for 90 days. So, you know, it's not forever. But
so I guess there are a couple of things here. First, if the non-Muslim residents of those countries are allowed into the country, that would bother you, Tony, is my understanding. Well, I'll check that. And the other thing is the 90 days, if it gets expanded, that I'm guessing that would bother both of you as well.
Yeah, like I said, I don't see the need for it at all. I don't see a need for the ban, just because we already have the tools available to discriminate for security reasons. There's, you know,
I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to look it up as I'm doing this, and I'm pretty sure there are exceptions.
Yes,
you need a chat room, Patrick. If we had a chat room, we'd already know the answer.
Right, but okay, Brian, what did you did you want to say something about my heart wrenching? You know, there is one point at which other things don't matter, but that thing you stand on, Rand.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I agree with on the ban. I mean, I just think that, I mean, we should, I guess maybe one of my little things about the, like I said, with the Syrian refugees, and, you know, believe me, I want our country to help. And I, you know, I think there are legitimate security concerns, but like I said, we have the ability to vet people and let them in. And we should be doing that. I mean, we're a big country, you know, we got a lot to give, you know, we got a lot more room. So I'll go off in a little bit off the path, just to kind of be a little more a devil's advocate. One of the interesting things I find about the concern about the refugees is that it seems kind of like, you know, Europe really took it on the chin, and they've been taking in a lot of refugees. And, you know, and when Obama was president, you know, there wasn't a lot of criticism on him about taking in refugees and then like the, you know, and then doing much about, you know, Syria anyway. You know, I just find that, you know, he kind of got a free pass and all that, or to a certain degree, you know, the whole red line thing that came to nothing. And, I was always kind of like, for me, I always wanted like no fly zones in Syria. You know, I wanted, you know, at a minimum, you know, set something up like that. And, you know, there wouldn't be as much of a refugee crisis as there is now. Yeah. You know?
Well, yeah, maybe. That we get into a whole lot, whole different conversation. But you know what saddens me the most is that the way I look at it, and maybe that's naive, but the way I look at it, this is terrorism achieving its goals. Because as I don't know if I've said this on the show before, but maybe I have. We in France have been hit by terrorism as much as, you know, anyone, at least in number of attacks.
That's been terrible.
And in the U.S., you've had the biggest one. Clearly, 9/11 was a tragedy of unspeakable proportions. But ultimately, the death toll of terrorism in the West, and I'm not talking about the real victims, you know, if we're talking numbers, which is the Muslim countries, but
correct.
In the West, we have a few thousand deaths over, let's say, a decade or two, which is, I don't want to diminish that, but
I don't think you are.
The length to which we're going to try and prevent terrorism are what terrorism is hoping to happen, in my opinion. And I'm not only talking about the constant concern and worry and fear, but also these kinds of decisions that I think weigh on the souls of nations and on the souls of citizens, because it's again about choices. At some point, you have to decide, am I going to be taken up and eaten alive by that fear and make decisions that are contrary to my ideals? Maybe ideals are different everywhere, but I like to think that all of us, no matter the political creed or religious opinions, we strive for, you know, generosity and I'll just say goodness. We want people to be good. And that's not a leftist naive way of looking at things. I think even, you know, everyone on the political spectrum, ultimately, we want things that we believe are good. No one wants things that are bad. And I think everyone would agree that intolerance is on the undesirable side of moral decisions. And this seems to veer more towards intolerance. And even if you agree that it's a necessary evil, I think it's still something that you look at and think, ah, you know, it's bad, but we have to do it. And for what? Let's look at things objectively. For what? Yes, a few thousand tragic, horrible, concerning deaths that we do have to do something about. We do have to do a lot about. That travel ban isn't, I mean, it's more vetting, maybe. I really don't think so. But let's say we're gaining a tiny bit of increased security. I really think we're losing something far more important here. And I mean, we're doing the same thing in France. I'm not in that general sense. I'm not throwing, you know, I'm not pointing my finger to America only. It's the example here, but we're doing the same thing everywhere. And it is the goal of terrorism. Terrorism terrorizes us. It's in the name, into losing our souls. And the reason we're so frustrated and alarmed, and, you know, express our frustration on Twitter, Tony, you were talking about, is that we feel we are, as countries, as nations, losing our souls, losing our way, and allowing those terrorists to win the moral fight that is the real fight we're fighting. I'm getting a little bit.
Well, I think I hear part of what you're saying is that I think the ban generated as much fear and concern as it was supposed to allay, you know. It was, you know, that was the problem with it, I think. And like I said, I'm like, and there really, like I said, in my mind, there was no need for it. I mean, it was, now you got people, I mean, you have people who are concerned because they just don't know, because, you know, because of the way they rolled that out, you don't know. You don't know 100%. Like, you know, I was just looking at my Twitter and, you know, this actress I follow, she's from Canada and she's a little bit concerned. You know, is it, you know, is it justified? Well, yeah, to a degree, yeah. I mean, what do you know? You know, how do you know what's going to happen? You know, that's why, you know, that rollout of the travel ban, and, you know, things have to be done a certain way, you know, and to keep that happening. Yeah. Mm.
Tony, any, I'm going to end my contributions here. I'm going to try and give both of you guys the final word. Either in relation to my very naive and easy rant I did just now, or to anything else. What do you want to end with, Tony?
I just, Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. You've got a lot of more liberal people. I think it was on an episode of the Phileas Club. Maybe it was Wendy was talking. I could be completely butchering who or where I heard this, was talking about the difference between liberals and conservatives. Liberals are more concerned with empathy, and conservatives are more concerned with justice. And, you know, there's absolutely some, and maybe that's ringing a bell to you, I don't know, but there's absolutely something to that, you know, and I feel your empathy towards all these people and the idea that you just want to help people. And that's,
It's not that I want to help people. It's that I want to define who I am as a moral person.
Right. Well, you know, when you're talking about morals, I have a very specific set of morals as well. And, you know, I try to live by those. I don't want to be racist. I don't want to be sexist, but I also don't want, and I say, but I'm not saying this counteracts those things, but how about I just say, I also want to live by the biblical morals that I try to live by. And so that's difficult. It's not difficult for me, but it's becoming more difficult in our nation because that's what I was talking about earlier. I'm encouraged by some of the things that I've seen because I feel like perhaps that moral compass that I use, and yes, this is about me right now, will be directed back to the way that I feel that it should be. I'm hoping at least that happens. So,
okay. Yeah, I understand what you're saying about different morals. I was trying to, and I do want to say one thing about justice. Again, in my neck of the woods, I'm considered a rather right-wing leaning person, and I do understand the value of strength. I think it is incredibly important, and I think in many situations, in many countries, in many contexts, there is a lack of that. And that leads to very concerning situations as well. So I don't want to make it... Shut up, Siri. I'm not talking to you. Jeez. I didn't even call your name. That leads to very concerning situations, but... I think you need both, and this feels like it's going overboard in one direction. Anyway, I could go on. I'm not going to because I said I wouldn't, and I shouldn't. Brian.
So we didn't even talk about Russia yet?
Oh, well, I think we kind of did, but we didn't need to when we were talking about a few things. No, let's not
talk about Russia. We get another hour in on that?
Let's not. It will be another one, another special. Did you see that they... Okay, never mind. The sky that was... No. Let's not. Brian, last... You can finish that this episode.
Let's see. What did we not cover?
No, I mean a conclusion. Let's wrap it up. If there's anything you want to say, in final words for the show.
Let's see. I'm just taking Trump a little bit at a time. You know, I want to see where it's going to go. I'm not completely happy how it's been. Things have been handled, but I'm just trying to take it one thing at a time. I don't think hyperbole by either side is really helps things. You know, I don't see Trump starting a nuclear war or ordering the military to shoot U.S. citizens and, you know, all that stuff. No, I've literally said, I mean, there some prominent celebrities have been saying, tweeting that on Twitter. They've, you know, and it's just kind of like, okay, you know, let's, you know, take a breath, because there are so many salient things you can criticize Trump on, but that's not one of them. You know, it's like, there's a lot of reasons you can criticize Trump for.
And that's what we're trying to do, criticizing right. things or critiquing things rather in that right. are, you know, that are a little bit more coherent than, because we all know that shooting US citizens that, you know, are Muslims and blacks is step four in his program to overtake the US. So we're not there yet. We have time. It's fine.
Yeah. Just a
little bit. That will be episode, you know, 80, 89. We still have time.
Well, I mean, like I said, it was this.
Let's be reasonable is your message.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I get why people don't like him. I mean, I don't, you know, someone says they don't like Trump. I'm like, okay, I get it. I mean, I don't, you know, like I said, I'm skeptical. I'm still skeptical. When Sean Spicer goes up there, I'm skeptical, you know, but I've always, you know, but that's the way I've been. I was skeptical, you know, like I said, when Obama was in, I was skeptical, you know. I think, like I said, what I was trying to get to earlier was that, you know, like I said, a lot of Republicans, we've always been skeptical. And like now you got a lot of people, you know, they've had, you know, they've been on vacation for the last eight years. And now it's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, it's like you should have been skeptical the whole time. You know, you just, you know, I'm not saying
you don't think it's different for the government. You don't think it's different? You don't think it's another level?
No, I think it's different. I think it is different. No. I'm not saying it's the same thing. I mean, look at it. I mean, 2 weeks in, that was no honeymoon at all. Goodness gracious, you know,
okay, let's see what happens in, you know, another few months, and maybe we'll reconvene and listen to this episode and critique ourselves.
See where we're at.
Yeah, see where we're at and maybe have a laugh at me, hopefully, or a cry at everything else. I really hope that I'm over-dramatizing everything. I hope so. We'll see.
I mean, I'll be honest. I wouldn't be surprised if it got to that point where then 6 months from now, you know, if I said, F him, you know, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, I hope not. I hope it doesn't get to that point. I hope Tony is still getting, you know, the reasons he voted for it are, to me, you know, I disagree with the policies, but I really hope that those are the worst things we're going to see from my point of view, and it's not going to be things that Tony thinks are unacceptable. Because if
I really feel, Patrick, you know, I'm basing this on gut feeling, what have you, that it's going to be okay. Right. It's going to be fine.
Well, let's hope we can discuss things in a few months, maybe on Twitter or maybe here, and think and say, you know what, Tony, you were right. Let's hope.
That's usually how it goes.
I think we're going to still have the missteps. I think what will save him is if he gets the economy going, then that will save him.
You know, I really think he's just a clown, and there's no ulterior motive agenda behind it, in the sense that I hope he's just, anyway. All right, let's not launch into that whole.
Well, I would just keep in mind what I said at the beginning of the show about what Robert Gates said about how it's you know, like I said, it's like two parallel worlds, you know.
So. Yeah, it's possible. I mean, again, I'm on the verge of being like really I don't know. I've talked about this for an hour and a half. If you don't know where I stand from all of this, if you don't know where all of us stand. All right. That is going to do it for us. Before we go, do you guys want to say where people can find you on the internet? It's fine if you don't want to advertise anything, but if you do, Tony, you go ahead.
Yeah, that's fine. I got some good feedback at last time I was on this show, and that was probably more controversial than this one even. So you can find me on Twitter at Tony Staley. Not been quite as active lately. I go through ups and downs on Twitter, so I'm probably due to be a little more active soon.
Cool. Thank you. And Brian, what about you?
I'm at B Hess on Twitter. if you're interested. I guess the only thing I wanted to kind of mention is that I'm reading The Fall of the Third Republic, the French Third Republic by William Shire, and I'm enjoying it. So if anybody's interested, pick it up. If you like the rise and fall of the Third Reich, read this. It's very interesting. He gives a lot of background, though.
All right. Cool. Thank you very much, Brian. The Fall of the Third Republic. What's the name of the author?
William Shire. He wrote The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And if you haven't read that, that's another one that's a great read.
There you go. Thank you very much to both of you. And I do want to reiterate the fact that I'm thankful you guys come on this show. I don't know, but I'm guessing it's an audience that is probably a little bit more left-leaning than what your usual circles are. But as always, this show is about listening to people. Even when I rant, the most important part isn't Patrick ranting. The most important part is the other people feeling like they can express what they think and what they feel, because if we don't hear other people in a relatively a safe environment, I hate to say this, but a safe space, or at least a reasonable discussion forum, then there's no way anything can work. So right. Hopefully
this... I'm just sorry I wasn't able to bust Turkey's chops. So.
Yeah, I'm sure would have been happy to bust yours as well. It will happen at some point in the future. So for me, it's not Patrick on Twitter, not Patrick on Facebook, and not the Phileas Club on Patreon. And talking about the response from the community after the previous show that we posted on Saturday, I got a message from Tyler on Twitter, which really got me, like, it hit me in the feels. He was listening to the show on Saturday and he was in his car and he stopped the car and recorded a message he sent to me on Twitter. I think I'm going to append it at the end of this show, because I might not have said it before, but this show is really difficult. It's really hard to do intellectually. I'm not ashamed to say this. It's really the toughest show I do, and it doesn't have the biggest following. You know, it's less politics and these kinds of things are less sexy than tech and gaming. But the response I get from the community is making it entirely worth it, because in this environment of intense craziness and anger and outrage, which is sometimes justified, sometimes not, and I'm talking about the US, France, and other countries as well, having managed to have carved out a little space where the community is, you know, bienveillant, we say in French, like, is looking out for everyone, like, in a positive manner, even when we disagree, is incredibly precious to me. So, and Tyler basically expressed this in a way that was incredibly rewarding. So thank you very much, Tyler. I'll put the message at the end. And more broadly, wherever you stand, thank you, everyone, for listening to this show. Thank you for making the community alive and active and looking out for everyone, no matter where we're from. Ultimately, I think we are... we mean well in everything we do, and that's the most important thing. So thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with another episode probably at the end of the month. I certainly hope we're not having to buy canned goods and bottled water to survive the apocalypse by then. See you then.
Hey, Patrick, just wanted to say that, you know, today was one of the toughest days of the Trump administration for me, with the Muslim ban and everything, and getting out of my house and seeing that, you know, the new podcast was up for Phileas Club, putting that on in my car as I drove to do errands, really kind of turned my day around. And I think that we have to all do more to support each other and to support podcasts like yours in times like this, because that's where a lot of us are getting our energy from. You know, you read Twitter and you see, you go on YouTube as well, and you see so many comments that are very abusive, and it makes you pretty sad about the state of things right now. But listening to productive and engaging podcasts like yours is what's helping a lot of us right now. And so I wanted to let you know that. And I wanted to do more than just sending you a tweet to say that. And I think that everybody should be doing something like that. Okay, thanks.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.